Good evening, everybody. My name is Brian Washington, and I would like to welcome you all to tonight's telephone town hall meeting with Diane Ravitch. For those of you who are wondering if you're connected, you are, and right now you are in what is called listen-only mode, which basically means that I can hear you, or you can hear me, rather, but I cannot hear you, at least not yet. In just a moment, though, we'll begin the teletown hall, but first let me go over a few housekeeping items. Now, if you would like to ask a question, it's very simple. At any time, you can press *3 on your touchtone phone. Once again, that's *3 on your touchtone phone, and you will be put in line to speak with one of our staff members. They'll take down your name and where you're calling from, and then we will try to get your question on just as quickly as possible. So the next time you hear your name, you will be live to the entire conference, and you'll be able to ask your question directly to Diane. Now, I know it all sounds like a lot, but trust me, it's very simple. And if you have any questions, you can ask our staff members while they're taking down your name and all your information. Now, we'll be visiting for a while tonight, so there should be ample time to take a number of questions. So feel free to go ahead and press *3 right now if you'd like to ask a question. Now, we will try, as I said, to get to everybody's questions tonight, but in the event we do not, I need you to stay on the line. Once again, stay on the line at the end, and you'll be able to record your question, and we'll get Diane to address your question that way. Speaking of Diane, in just a moment, you will hear from her, but first, I would like to introduce you to Jennifer Berkshire. Jennifer is a writer and a public education advocate in Massachusetts. She writes for the blog EduShyster. Jennifer, good evening.
Hi, Brian. Thanks so much. My name is Jennifer Berkshire. I'm also the blogger known as EduShyster. This is such a thrill. I think, as everyone on this call certainly knows, Diane Ravitch has a new book out. It's called The Reign of Error, The Hoax of the Privatization Movement, and the Danger to America's Public Schools. Diane has been crisscrossing the country talking to parents and students and teachers, and tonight we have her all to ourselves, which is just great. And I think I can go out on a limb here and say that Diane is going to tell us that there's some bad news. In fact, it's pretty bad, but there's also some good news. The bad news, of course, is that we're up against an attack on our public schools, the likes of which we've never really seen before. The good news is that people like you all across the country are really waking up and beginning to understand not just the magnitude of the threat, but that there's really something that they can do about it. It can be hard. You know, we're all in our own communities, and we only see what's happening around us, what does and doesn't get reported in our local papers, in the local media, et cetera. But the great thing about Diane being out on the road in this way is that she's really getting a sense of the kind of movement that's emerging. And that's what she's going to tell us about tonight. So I hope that everyone has a great time listening to her. She's going to talk for about 15 minutes. She promised to talk fast so that we could ask lots of questions. That is her dog barking in the background. And without further ado, I would like to give you Diane Ravitch. Take it away, Diane.
Thank you, Jennifer. And if you do hear barking, that's my dog. Please ignore it. I can't help that. She's got a very deep voice. I'm really happy to be talking to what I assume is lots and lots of people. Right now, I think I'm just talking to Jennifer and about two other people. That's the way it feels. But let me give you a quick overview. We've been hearing for many years that public education is just terrible in America, and it's all the fault of the teachers. We've heard from people like Arne Duncan and Bill Gates and Joel Klein and endless others that American education is failing, it's obsolete, it's broken, and if we could just find those bad teachers and fire them, everybody would have high test scores. This is all wrong. This is what I try to prove in my latest book. The good news is that the bad news is we're up against powerful forces, a lot of money, the U.S. government and also these big foundations, the Gates Foundation, the Broad Foundation, the Walton Foundation. My guess is that if they held a meeting of all of them, their reformy group, they couldn't even fill a hotel ballroom. There's not that many of them. They just have a lot of money and political power. We have millions of people on our side, and our biggest job is to wake people up to the realities. The public doesn't understand that there is a move afoot to destroy public education. And they say that when I say that, I'm overstating it. But I see it happening in city after city. What I also see, which I find really exciting and heartening, is the tide is turning. I've seen in community after community that people get it. Parents are organizing, students are organizing, teachers are organizing. And the public is beginning to understand that there's actually an organized campaign. It's not just here and there. There is an organized national campaign to dismantle public education, to reduce the resources where the kids have the greatest needs in places like Philadelphia and Detroit and Kansas City and St. Louis, to shut down and to privatize entire school districts using New Orleans as a model. I just learned today that Memphis was going to be following the New Orleans model. The New Orleans model, of course, is to close down public education, turn everything over into charters, and get rid of the teachers' union so the teachers have no voice and rely on Teach for America to take the place of experienced teachers. We're going to be seeing much the same happening in places like Indianapolis, Detroit, probably in Philadelphia as well, and many other cities. There are some states like Michigan, Louisiana, Wisconsin, Ohio, and others that are pushing full steam ahead to try to transfer public money into private hands. And they use this phrase, which is frankly very obnoxious, to say that school choice is the civil rights issue of our time. And when I hear that phrase, all I can think of for some reason is George Wallace, because George Wallace and Strom Thurmond and other segregationists used to say that they were defending the rights of people by making sure they had school choice and wouldn't have to go to the local public school. And so we see this part of this overall mantra. I mean, it's disgusting to me that the U.S. Department of Education is not fighting this, but they're actually facilitating it. And so we have seen schools closing in many districts across the country because their scores were too low. And I think this is an outrage because this has never happened in American history. We've never closed schools because their scores were too low. The people in charge thought it was their duty to try to do something to help the kids and give them the resources they needed to do a better job. So we have for years been fighting this false narrative. But what I want you to take away, if you take away one thing from this conversation, is not just that we're fighting giant forces, but everything these guys are pushing is failing. High-stakes testing is failing. Everybody agrees No Child Left Behind was a failure. Race to the Top is a failure. Teaching to the Test is a failure. Evaluating teachers by test scores has failed wherever it's been tried, and they're still trying it, still pumping millions and millions. I understand today that Bill Gates announced a $10 million grant to Denver to continue evaluating teachers by test scores, even though just a few days ago he said that it would take at least a decade before we could figure out whether this stuff worked. Well, the stuff means all the stuff he's been pouring hundreds of millions of dollars into. Merit pay has failed wherever it's been tried. Charter schools don't produce different results than public schools unless they skim and kids and kick kids out. And vouchers have been a flop. The reality is American education is not broken. It's not obsolete. We have been subject to a false narrative. The reality is, and this is what I document in my book, which I'll hope you'll use as a kind of an action guide, I've got the graphs from the U.S. Department of Education that shows test scores are higher than they've ever been in history, and it's not because of No Child Left Behind. They've been rising steadily for 40 years. For whites, blacks, Hispanics, and Asians, graduation rates are the highest in history for all of these groups. The dropout rates are the lowest they've ever been in history. We have been subject over the years to lie after lie about our schools. What the good news is that there are groups such as all of you that are on this phone and many groups that you've never heard about, the groups created by educators, by parents, by students. There's Moral Monday in North Carolina where citizens and teachers and join together and just stand in protest in front of the legislative capitol because of the terrible legislation pushed in that state by its government. I helped to create something called the Network for Public Education with Anthony Cody and with a group of others, and the network has tried to link together grassroots groups across the country and to create a kind of a newswire where we could all stay informed and encourage each other because we need to know, every one of us needs to know, we are not alone. When I was in Rhode Island yesterday, I was welcomed by the Providence Student Union, What a fantastic group of kids. These are high school students who know more about high-stakes testing than the State Commissioner of Education in Rhode Island. And they've been fighting the use of a standardized test as a high school graduation requirement, knowing that probably 30 to 40% of the kids are likely to fail that test and not get a high school diploma, and that's not fair. So they have been absolutely amazing with their political theater. I have a blog about it on the Huffington Post today, asking whether kids today are in fact the greatest generation, and pointing to the Provident Student Union is the inspiration for that idea that kids can get together and we should listen to them. They know this high-stakes testing is not working. There's a group that's been created by educators called the BATS. You may have heard of it. Every place I go, there's a group of excited teachers who hold up their hands and yell, "We're BATS." That's badass teachers. The badass teachers are ready to rock and roll, and they've had enough. They're sick of being knocked around, and they want to stand up for their profession. The teachers at Garfield High School in Seattle led a test revolt that was incredibly successful. The superintendent warned them they might be fired. The superintendent warned them they might lose pay. They stood firm, and they lost nothing. The superintendent backed down. Just last fall, there was a voucher campaign in Florida, defeated overwhelmingly by the people of Florida. A few weeks ago, there was an election in Bridgeport, Connecticut, where the insurgent Democrats ousted the machine Democrats, which probably puts an end to what is likely to be Paul Vallis's career as a savior of public schools, because the people of Bridgeport didn't like what he was doing. Despite the fact that he actually didn't save any schools in Chicago or Philadelphia or New Orleans. And I would also add that another great sign for me as a New Yorker is that we just had an election, and the guy who is likely to be the next mayor of New York is Bill de Blasio. And Bill de Blasio stood very firm against corporate reform. He said he would not be catering to the charter crowd. He would stand up for the 95% of the kids who attend traditional public schools. He's very much in favor of early childhood education. His second in command is just elected, Letitia James. If you ever see her on the internet, absolutely astonishing. She's already said she's going to be suing everybody in sight because of the way they have created separate but equal between the charter schools and the public schools. So I think what we have to bear in mind is the guys who are opposing public education, the guys who are criticizing teachers, are losing. They are losers, losers, losers. Everything they're promoting is not working. And the agenda that we have, anti-high-stakes testing, having tests developed by teachers, not relying so much on standardized tests, but we're pouring too much money into it. We're the only nation in the world that tests every child every year. That's ridiculous. We have to recognize if we really want to save our kids that poverty matters terribly. We have to do something about reducing poverty and changing the tax structure in this country. This is obviously a long-term kind of goal. We have to be concerned about the health and well-being of the kids who come to the schools. We must have reduced class sizes for the children who have high needs. We have to have healthy kids. We have to have a strong profession. We should have entry into the profession, which is very high. We should not have kids coming in who graduated college last June, got 5 weeks of training, and then are thrown in as regular teachers. Being a professional means you have a professional preparation and not that you were popped into the classroom with a few weeks of training. So I think that we have a lot of things on our agenda. They're all positive things, and they're things that are not only positive, but they actually have research behind them. When we look to countries like Finland or some of the other high-performing countries in the world, there are places where there are no charters, there are no vouchers, there's a strong public school system. There's no happens to be no standardized testing at all in Finland until the kids finish high school. And there's a very strong profession. So what goes hand in hand is a strong profession, concern for the well-being and welfare of children, reducing the poverty rates, making sure that children have decent lives. All of those things matter. And I think that we have the numbers of people to turn this narrative around. And we have been the subject, as people on the pro-education side, we've been the subject of psychological warfare. And once it is exposed as a false narrative, then we can begin to return to common sense and have common sense education policies that are actually grounded in research and experience. Thank you very much for listening in, and I hope we can have a good conversation.
All right, and on that note, let me just repeat, if you have a question tonight for Diane Ravitch, all you have to do is press star 3 on your touch-tone phone. Once again, that is star 3 on your touch-tone phone to ask Diane a question. And our first question tonight is going to come from Kristen in New Jersey. Kristen, what is your question?
Hi. I'm from the North Student Union, and we're planning a boycott this fall to protest public education budget cuts. And we would like to know if Diane would be willing to speak at a rally. And also, could you talk about the relationship between stripping public school budgets and corporate takeover of education?
Well, I don't know if I can speak at your rally because I don't know what my schedule is. But I would urge you to act together, to be strong with your union and with your colleagues, and to stand against the budget cuts, and also to make sure that you reach out to bring parents in, because parents have to understand that these budget cuts are hurting their kids, and it's not about you. It's not about you looking out for yourself or your pension or your or whatever. I mean, Michelle Rhee has done a great job, along with Joel Klein and others, of saying that teachers are so greedy and unions are so awful because you're not putting students first, and she's the only one who puts students first. Well, if there's anybody who puts students first, it's their own parents. And that's why parents have to be your partners in fighting this and in recognizing that we cannot strip our public schools of the arts and of psychologists and social workers and libraries and librarians. And there are all of these services that they need because the kids need them. It's not to provide jobs, as you would hear it from the reformers, but because there are real needs. And I think that a good watchword would be, this is what kids in affluent suburbs have. Why don't we have it in our schools, too?
All right. And once again, let me just say that if you have a question tonight for Diane, press star 3 on your touchtone phone. And, Diane, you'll be happy to know that we have a huge number of people calling in and a lot of questions on deck. So let me just repeat what I said at the very beginning. We are going to try and get to every question tonight, but clearly we won't be able to. But if you have a question and we didn't get to it tonight, stay on the line and we'll record your question and Diane will address it that way. We'll get it to Diane so that she can address it. Our next question tonight is going to come from Angie Sullivan in Las Vegas. Angie, what is your question?
Hi. I had a quick question about public school teachers being disenfranchised. At the local level, at the state level, and at the national level. I don't understand how the billionaires have such a strong grip. They're so organized, and how they have just taken over on every level. And the veteran public school teachers, I think we've been working hard just been swamped, and we have no voice. How does this happen, and what can we do about it now?
Well, it's happening because they're billionaires. They have a lot of money, and when they go into a political campaign, politicians are very eager to take their money. I don't want to be too crass about it, but I think that's why Obama and Duncan, or why he chose Duncan and not Linda Darling Hammond, because Linda would have had a very, I think, positive agenda, whereas Duncan has the corporate agenda. And Duncan continues to argue for high-stakes testing, for school closings. Part of what we're up against is an incredibly well-messaged PR campaign. It's as though these guys, with all their money, hired several of the best PR firms in the country and created the lingo. And so they talk about their civil rights leaders. I mean, they're closing down public schools and they're civil rights leaders. I mean, come on. You can't imagine Martin Luther King walking arm in arm with hedge fund managers. It just doesn't make sense. But you have these billionaires and these guys who are immensely wealthy making this ridiculous claim. I think that one of the things that's been very helpful that we should all make greater use of is the ALEC Exposed website. It's eye-opening when you discover how many of the state laws that are so horrible have actually been written by ALEC, and that the governors and the legislators aren't even writing their own legislation. They're just taking instructions from ALEC about what to say. I would hope that the unions, the NEA and the AFT, would be more proactive in pursuing some legal strategies to try to take the tax exemption away from some of these organizations, the Friedman Foundation being one of them. The Friedman Foundation exists purely to promote vouchers. I would even question the tax-exempt status of the Walton Family Foundation. They spend $160 million a year promoting charters and vouchers. But we have just a bunch of these foundations. I think there's a website. It's the John and Laura Arnold Foundation has a website of which foundations are promoting charters. And they're great supporters of privatization. And the dozens and dozens of foundations supporting charters takes your breath away. But what you have to remember is, and it's what I hold to as a kind of a belief, we live in a democracy. We can vote these people out, and they can take all that money in the world, but it doesn't necessarily mean they'll be able to buy the elections. We saw this most recently in Los Angeles, where the mayor tried to, and Eli Broad, put together a huge multimillion-dollar campaign chest to try to beat two candidates, Steve Zimmer and Monica Ratliff, and both of them won, and they won by a door-to-door campaign. They didn't have the money of the big guys. They didn't have the millions and millions, but they had shoe leather, and the shoe leather won. So I think that's really important, because as long as we hold on to our belief that our numbers are more important than their money, we'll beat them.
Bob in Milwaukee, what is your question?
Hi, this is Bob. I'm co-chair of the Coalition Against the MPS Takeover, that's the Milwaukee Takeover, that consists of community, parent, and educator groups. We're being overwhelmed by the money of the right, facing a New Orleans recovery zone proposal by the Milwaukee Metropolitan Association of Commerce, several bills that are on the fast track in the state legislature to force the district to sell surplus schools to private school operators, an expansion of the voucher schools statewide, an invasion of rocket ship schools, which the city government just chartered for 8 additional charter schools. We're working with the NEA and several community groups on the ground, but what additional national resources are out there to help with our grassroots movement, our grassroots struggle here in Milwaukee? Thank you.
Well, you know, you're facing tremendous odds because you've got a very hostile governor, a hostile legislature. The rocket ship schools are really corporate schools with no arts, where the kids do test prep on computers most of the time, and their plan is to ultimately to enroll 1 million children. They're a scary bunch. There are a lot of different charters that are scary bunches. I mean, Milwaukee has, for me, been the poster child of why none of this works. As you well know, Milwaukee has had charters and vouchers since 1990, so it's been almost 23 years of competition and choice. And when we look at Milwaukee on the national test, on the federal test, the NAEP test, it's one of the lowest performing cities in the country. So all that competition and choice did nothing. The kids in the voucher schools have, in some cases, lower scores than the kids in the public schools. And the kids in the charter schools do no better than the kids in the public schools. All of this is nonsense. It's absolute nonsense. So I think that you must work with your union. And I wish that I could say that I knew a billionaire who was prepared to step in on our side. I spend a lot of time trying to find that billionaire. I have one or two leads that I'm going to follow up on. But I do think that what you have to do is to do the boots on the ground thing and really organize the people of Milwaukee to say, none of this works. They've had 22 years, 23 years to prove vouchers and charters, and instead of saying we were wrong, we made a huge mistake, they're giving us more of what doesn't work. So you've got to get your own campaign going to do to combat their lies, because that's what you're up against.
Our next question tonight comes from Tammy in Bridgeport, Connecticut.
Hi, Diane. My name is Tammy. I'm a mother of two children, students in Bridgeport, Connecticut. I'm a volunteer with the Working Family Party. Our superintendent is a corporate reform, Paul Vallis. When he took over, the first thing he did was take away the ability of parents to have input in the schools. Gutting our school governances, he funded in special education and for arts. And instead of pouring money into even more high-stakes testing, I'm hopeful because this year parents and educators are fighting back and working families is backing a slate of pro-public education candidates for the Richwood Board of Education that want to put our communities and our students first. So here's my question. If we win, we'll have a chance to make the change. What kind of policies do you recommend for our next Board of Education to make sure our schools provide quality education for every student?
Well, first of all, Bridgeport is one of the very hopeful stories, as I mentioned in my opening remarks. It's one of the great stories, and as I've gone around the country, I always point to Bridgeport as one of the signs that the people can beat the power, because Connecticut, after all, is the home of so many hedge fund managers, so many people who work on Wall Street, and they all think they know how to reorganize public schools through corporate methods. And it's the home of something called ConCan, which you're familiar with. And ConCan gave birth to 50Can. And 50Can is now MinCan, CarolinaCan, and New York Can. All these cans are all over the country. And it's basically the same organization. It's very, very wealthy people, usually in the financial industry, hedge fund people, who've decided that they should take over the school system and charterize it. But you stopped them. You stopped them in their tracks. So you give everybody a lot of hope. As for a positive agenda, I think that you do have to take up, well, I would urge that you to read my book because I've got a dozen chapters on a positive agenda. Part of it has to be to make sure that kids have access to health clinics, that there's a school nurse in every school and school psychologists, social workers, that there are small enough classes, particularly in the early grades, so that kids don't fall behind, and that will not only help the kids keep up with their peers and learn to read and write and do mathematics, but it also has a very positive impact on behavior when class sizes are small. We also know the importance of early childhood education. So I think you have to look at a community-wide approach where you involve parents and you involve the community and you say that public education is not about who sends their kids to the public schools. It is the responsibility of the entire community. And even people who send their kids to parochial schools, even people who have no children at all, have an investment in public education because the young people who are now in public schools will be, in no time at all, voting and choosing our leaders, and they'll be sitting on juries, and we want them to be as well prepared as possible. They might even be sitting on your jury someday.
This is the Teletown Hall featuring Diane Ravitch. If you have a question for Diane, all you have to do is press star 3 on your touchtone phone. Let me just say that in the event we don't get to every question tonight, I need you to stay on the line and you'll be able to record your question and we'll get it to Diane and she can address it that way. Our next live question tonight is going to come from Phil in Buffalo, New York. Phil.
Hi, Diane. Phil Romore from the Buffalo Teachers Federation. First,
hi,
my
Phil.
My first question is, how do we clone you? You don't have to answer that one. My second question is, my real question is this. What kind of legal action, I heard you talking about the NEA taking away some of, NEA and AFT really getting off their duff and going after some of these people that are contributing all this money. But has there been any investigation of the kind of legal action that we can take either state by state or nationwide, whether it's unequal enforcement or anything like that, that we can really get their attention and really take them to court and whip their butts?
Well, there should be, and I can tell you that in Louisiana, the Louisiana Federation of Teachers, which has really no rights because it's a right-to-work state, they were able to stop Bobby Jindal cold in his track, but through legal action. And they went through the Louisiana courts, and they said that the voucher program was unconstitutional because the state constitution says that the money was allocated to public schools, and there was no way in the world that the courts could read the constitution and say that the money should be taken from the public school fund and given over to voucher schools. So that was one very powerful message because it was even upheld in the when it was appealed in Louisiana, and they could not use public money for voucher schools. And the second thing in Louisiana was that Jindal rushed through a piece of legislation to strip teachers of everything, of tenure, to add evaluations based on test scores. He threw in about a dozen ways that he could think of to make teachers in Louisiana feel that they were at the bottom of the barrel, and they sued him. And the judges threw out that act because they said, well, you're only allowed to legislate one thing at a time, and this has about 10 different subjects. So that got thrown out. So they have used legislation, not legislation, they've used the courts very effectively. What I would love to see happen at the national level is to see the people who have the big bucks. And the only people, frankly, on the side of teachers and principals in public education is the unions. Nobody else has the money except the unions. And they could very well, I would love to see them go after some of these activist foundations or activist nonprofits and say, take away their tax-exempt status. They have absolutely, what grounds do they have to have tax-exempt status when they're advocating for legislation? That's illegal. So, yeah, there is a lot that could be done legally, and I would like to see more creativity coming from the people who have the money to pursue these legal avenues. And as for cloning me, I have to tell you, quite honestly, I have given a lot of thought, because when I was interviewed recently, one of the reporters, this was from the New York Times, said, who's going to take your place? And I was stumped, and I felt very bad about that, because this movement, this pushback can't rely on me. I mean, I'm very honored that I have the opportunity to be a voice for people who are being beaten up every day and who are doing society's most valuable work and being underpaid for it. But there have to be more people who are prepared to step up. And there will always be somebody, and I don't know who that person will be. Maybe it'll be Lena Darling Hammond. Maybe it'll be somebody else. Maybe it'll be Anthony Cody. But we must develop the leadership so that there are many leaders across the country. There have to be leaders in every community, leaders in every state, and people who get it, who understand that we need not be defensive, that we are fighting a powerful corporate takeover of American education, and it's wrong. It undermines the foundations of our democracy. It destroys the morale of the teaching profession. I mean, I can give you chapter and verse about the number of people who are not going into teaching because of all of these attacks on teaching. And all of this is coming from the far right. And what is most disheartening about it all is the fact that the Obama administration is sitting by silently, either abetting it or just being quiet. Quiet in the face of increased segregation, quiet in the face of the highest child poverty rate in the advanced world, quiet as the charters are rapaciously pushed public schools out of their space. I mean, quiet in the face of the proliferation of for-profit charters, which is absolutely crazy. I mean, since when have we ever had for-profit public schools in America? So part of my argument is that charters are not public schools. And I keep saying this again and again, because every time charters are brought into court, every time they've been brought before the National Labor Relations Board, every time there is an issue about the charters, their defense is always, we're not public schools. Why should we be bound by the same rules? They're public schools when it comes to getting the money, but they're not public schools when it comes to obeying the law, because they claim they're not covered by the law. They're private corporations. The most recent example of this was in California, where a couple of charter founders were convicted of misappropriating $200,000 from their charter. And the California Charter School Association came in with an amicus brief and said they didn't steal, because they're not public schools. They're really a private corporation. So if they want to keep saying that they're a private corporation, let's agree with them and let us excuse them from the claim that they're public schools. They're not public schools. They are private corporations that are taking money away from public schools. And in some cities where the infrastructure of the city is actually fragile, this was a report that just came out of Moody's Investors, the charter schools are sucking the life out of the public schools and collapsing the public schools. So that's where we are today, and it's very dangerous. It's very tenuous, and we need a vigorous pushback about the importance of public education in a democratic society, and looking to those countries that we consider to be great countries, and I consider Finland to have an excellent education system, even though our kids did tie them on the last international test in math in fourth grade and in eighth grade. But nonetheless, it's a great public school system. They have no charters. They have no vouchers. They have a strong public school system, and all their teachers and all their principals belong to the same union.
Jeff in Lansing, Michigan, what is your question?
Hi, Diane. I'm a big fan of yours. Love the book. I'm just wondering, at the local level, even within my school, what we can do about this. We have administrators talking about, in our state, going for the green, you know, which means getting the passing the impossible level of test scores. And it just seems that, you know, we're buying into this, even as an urban school district, that we have to be held to these standards, and our administrators aren't sensitive to the issues that, you know, really affect us every day in the classroom. So it's really demoralizing. And I wonder, what kind of language you'd recommend that we use to face this, and also what would be appropriate language to speak to the community, so that we're not talking about really putting down people for their level of poverty, but simply stating the facts of the situation that we deal with every day.
Well, we really do need to change to a rhetoric of talking about what makes for a good society and what are our obligations to one another as citizens. What the choice movement has done, and there's no place where it has been more corrosive than in Michigan, by the way, has been to encourage people to think that we all should make a consumer choice, and that there's no such thing as district lines. Kids can choose any school they want. And then the districts in Michigan, or at least the superintendents, have told me that each of them spend about $100,000 a year advertising, trying to poach students from another district. And so you add all of that up, and it's millions and millions of dollars spent on advertising trying to poach students, and each year they poach them back and forth. But it's crazy. What the privatizers, what the corporate interests have done is to try to turn schooling into a consumer good when it's a civic responsibility. So we have to relearn the language of civic responsibility, and we have to argue against this notion of consumerism in education, because it's a no-win situation. Everybody looks out for himself, his own child, and yours can go hang. But that's not the kind of a society we should live in. We're all in the same boat together, and if each one looks out for himself, we're going to get nowhere and the boat's going to sink. So there has to be a sense of almost patriotism, civic duty, and we look out for the weakest because we want to be a decent people.
Let's go to Dr. Stuart Chen Hayes in the Bronx. Dr. Stuart, what is your question tonight?
Hi, Diane. Thank you so much for your advocacy to fight back against the corporate elites and powers. My question is, I'm a professor of school cancer education, and around the country what we're seeing, especially in urban areas, is the gutting of school counselors and school counseling programs. School counselors are often not mentioned in these conversations, and so it's critical that we hear your voice about what can we, who are school counselors and the educators of school counselors, do to fight back the power so that every student in every school gets a school counselor and a school counseling program.
Well, I think that you could make a list of what a good school should have, and if you're looking at an affluent school, maybe they have a guidance counselor. That's good. But most schools today, whether they're affluent or poor, they need people who will guide kids, and whether they're counselors, school psychologists, social workers, that's the infrastructure that schools need today. I think one of the things that frustrates me, and I think it's got to frustrate everybody, is that so much school money these days is going to outside consultants. And instead of paying for the basic needs of schools, we're paying these expensive consultants who will be paid millions to turn a school around, or millions to train teachers, or millions to do something with training leadership. And usually they don't have any experience doing that, but it's a good business. So if you're a young person and you're interested in education, and you're smart, you don't become a teacher. You join one of these firms that's feeding off the public trough and taking money right out of the school budget. The argument for counselors is the same as the argument for all of the other helping professions. Kids today come to school with enormous problems. They come, in many cases, from broken homes, from homelessness, from any number of disorders of society. And all the ills of society are being blamed on teachers and on schools, when in fact they're just the recipient of the end result of a lot of social neglect.
Stephanie in Orchard Lake, Michigan, what is your question tonight?
What are some specific examples of ways teachers can reclaim the educational agenda and elevate teaching as a profession?
Well, that's a good question. I think that the most important thing is that you have to keep inside your head a sense of who you are as a professional. I think we have gone through a very long period of time of teachers being beaten up and told that they're no good and that you come from the bottom third of your class or the bottom 10% or you're the worst people in society. And all of these negative messages have come out with such ferocity, coming from people who probably never went to a public school, never taught, but they're very certain that whoever's teaching must be below them, because after all, they're very rich and they're very powerful and you're not. But what you need to have as your most powerful tool is to know who you are and what you believe, and don't let them get inside your head. Letting them get inside your head destroys your own sense of efficacy and makes you feel that they're as bad as they paint you. So you have to believe in yourself, and you have to maintain your wholeness as a human being and your professionalism. And no matter what they throw at you, understand that someday all of these bad things that are going on now will pass, because there's an old saying of Martin Luther King used it. He said, the arc of history bends slowly, but it bends towards justice. These people will get bored. They will at some point walk away from what the mess that they've made, and you will all be left to pick up the pieces. And it's very important that you stand strong in your professional beliefs and your understanding of what's right for children and who you are as a professional, because when their efforts collapse, and you have to be there to celebrate, it's going to be like the fall of the Berlin Wall, and it will happen. It's going to happen sooner rather than later. I'm hopeful that the next presidential election will bring us somebody who understands what a mess the Bush-Obama era has been, and that we have to stop beating up on our schools, or we're not going to have an education system anymore. We'll just have a kind of a primitive, nasty, brutish, short, everybody out for himself choice system, and that's not the way of a good society. So believe in yourself, be strong, and work with other people to keep their morale up, and believe that the day will come when those values you hold dear will become the values that are recognized as true and real.
Unfortunately, we don't have time to get to any more questions, but I need everyone to stay on the line. And if you have a question, you'll be able to record it, and we'll get your question to Diane, and she'll address it that way. But right now, we're going to go back to Jennifer Berkshire for some closing remarks. Jennifer?
Thank you so much. And thank you, Diane, for talking and for answering questions. Almost everyone had, there was something in everyone's question that sort of hinted at the same thing. How can we, in our individual communities, band together in a way that makes us stronger and enables us to fight back against what, you know, can seem like a really sort of overpowering force? And those are the same sorts of questions that Diane has been getting really everywhere she travels around the country. So how do you do that? Well, one thing people are starting to do in communities around the country are little book study clubs around Diane's book. The first thing we need to do is just get our facts right. Who are these people? Where is the money coming from? And then once we have that and we have a conversation with parents and teachers, students are getting much more interested, then we can do more research. Diane mentioned a couple of websites in the course of her remarks, and I want to list those for you, and I'll also commit on Diane's behalf that she'll put up a little list of some of these resources on her blog tomorrow. She mentioned taking a look at ALEC Exposed to see who's writing these bills that are moving from state to state in such a cookie-cutter way and in a devastating fashion. And that website is ALEC, A-L-E-C, exposed.org. Be sure to check out the Network for Public Education. That is the network that Diane helped to start, and it's really bringing together grassroots organizations from all over the country. Check out, if you're not already, make sure to follow Diane's blog, dianeravitch.net. Check out mine, edusheister.com. I write regularly about the excesses of the corporate reform movement, but with a humorous bent so that we can laugh through our tears. I hope that people will stay on the line and continue to ask questions. Tonight really marks just the beginning of a conversation. We're going to be talking about this stuff for quite a while. And I just want to thank all of you for taking time out from your busy schedules tonight, and especially to Diane for her advocacy and her leadership. We appreciate what you're doing so much, and I don't think any of us could do it without you.
Well, thank you. And I guess if there's one thought I want to leave with everybody, it's that you have to have in your heart the belief that all of this will fail, that they're failing now, they will continue to fail, and that those of us who believe in children, who believe in a decent society, we're going to win. And just like the Berlin Wall fell, this too will fall. And we have to all be there to celebrate together.
And just before we say goodnight, I just want to remind everybody, you can leave your question, you can record your question if you stay on the line, and we'll get Diane to address it that way. And make sure you talk about the issue that you're addressing as well as the actions that you'd like to take as well, or if you'd like suggestions about some actions that you can take. Once again, I want to thank everybody for getting on the line, including Diane Ravitch, and we hope you have a good night.
Thank you.
Good night.